This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.
Hi, my name is Kgabo Legora and you're listening to Son of a Son, where I as a dad speak to other dads about how we can become better men. Today I'm joined by Teboho Mualusi. This dude is a heavy hitter in entertainment, in education and in business. And he's a dad. I really hope you enjoy this one. Hello, hello, and hello again. My name is Kgabo Legora, and this is Son of a Son. I'm so excited to be doing this again. It's been a minute. It's season two. I'm so excited. I'm joined today by Teboho Mualusi. Hey, the accolades are too many behind this man. Teboho, I learned about Teboho when I was doing a panel talk called Sip Sessions during the lockdown. About fathers during Father's Day times. Man, I was so inspired by the way that he thinks, the way he articulates his thoughts. I was just like, man, I need to get this guy on this podcast because he has such a fresh perspective on so many different things. He is the CEO of FAM, FAM Academy, Fashion, Art, and Music. Some of you might know it's an academy started by Black Coffee Laduma and Nelson Makamu. And he has so many other things going on. Hopefully we'll get to them as we talk. Tebza.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Kgabo? Happening, bro?
I'm good, man. Yeah. Strong, powerful.
How are you doing, bro?
Look, I think I'm better now. The weather has got an effect on my energy.
Okay.
I think the fact that we've been cooped up for so many days in the dark days, yes. So to speak, sure. Figuratively and otherwise.
Yeah.
Has just, you know, brought my spirits down. But spring sure. is on us. It's warm outside. The sun is kissing yes, our faces.
Sir. Yes, sir.
It's a great time to reconnect with people.
Yeah.
Even though we're still social distancing, you know, I feel more connected to the universe now more than ever.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling good, man. I'm powerful.
Sounds like a powerful statement and poem. Bro, I think, you know, I want to get to know you a yeah. bit more. Touch on a few things that I feel like I wanted to pick your brain about. You know, usually like when I have a guest on the show, I'm like, I do quite a bit of digging just to like figure out, you know, what's the story here? Mm. After looking at YouTube and digging in like till 2015, 14, found an interview where this lady's like, hey, the brightest young minds of South Africa, Destiny Man, top 40 under 40, MBA. And I'm like, yo.
Yeah, yeah.
Founder of Black Excellence. And I'm like, yes, okay. Now we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Bro, I found a lot of things about Black Excellence that are tied to you. You know, like your social media content is all about Black Excellence. What you stand for and what you push in your businesses is all about that. Although I might know, you know, the general thing about Black Excellence, why is it such a strong thing for you?
Yeah. I think it's just based on my lived experience of being a Black man living in Africa in the 21st century.
Sure.
You know, I think I categorize myself as being quite a privileged Black person.
Sure.
In so many ways. Number one, both my parents are still alive. Mm. Both my parents are still married. I've had the benefits of going to schools, private schools, universities.
Sure.
I've worked in corporate, and the list continues.
Yeah.
So when I look at the stats, I occupy probably what would be the top 2 percentile of people in South Africa, let alone Black people.
Mm.
And in acknowledging our privilege, I think it becomes important to know how to use that privilege in a way that matters.
Sure.
And in being a Black man in South Africa, knowing that the journey could have been, you know, so different for me.
Yeah.
I have to use this point of privilege in a way that really makes an impact.
Sure.
So Black excellence for me is a personification of how I've tried to live my life. It's a standard that I like to set for those that I like to keep company with.
Yeah.
But it's also an environment that I would like to create where the Black African child can really have a fair chance at making a contribution in the world.
Yeah. And I know, I think just from a bit of the digging, I saw that you work with your dad as well. That's like another, like, you know, level of privilege that I think a lot of people wish to have. It's like, what would it be like if I worked with my dad in like a business? Yeah. And I know that I saw your dad speaking about you and how like work is work and home is home, and he's still my son, but he's still, you know, he's still a big part of the business as well. How is that? How was that for you?
Yeah. It's so interesting, you know, the narrative has always been that as black people, we should aspire to almost how other people have organized themselves. We reference Indian communities, the Jewish communities, white communities, and how they've kind of galvanized themselves around number one, community, and number two, family.
Sure.
But if you think about the African story, the black African story, family, black African businesses have been with us for many centuries. Mm. It is when, you know, laws, apartheid laws were put in place that the black nuclear family was broken up and men had to move from where they were living to go work in a different place.
Sure.
And as such, you weren't able to cultivate that relationship where a father and a mother could build a family business with their children.
Yeah.
You know, and so Group Areas Acts and all these other instruments that broke up the family made sure that we're not able to have black-owned family businesses that are successful. And so, you know, being able to have the opportunity to work with my father is almost trying to reset and go back into time to almost bring that through as a narrative of the black experience.
Yeah, funny enough that you say that. My father in the last few years has been like drilling this thing in my head, like, bro, we need to live like the Jews live. Mm. We need to live like how the Indians live. And every single, and he says this because like, I think, you know, sometimes when you hit rock bottom and you're like, yeah, family is all that you've got.
Mm.
That's when my father would come in and say, bro, I've got you. Like, do you know how the Indians live when someone needs help?
Yeah.
They're going to all live together in the house. If there's no one that's going to be in need or in lack, like you struggle, we all struggle.
Mm.
That's kind of like the philosophy. And I think that like 100% with what you're saying, bro, like the disparity and the difference between our black community, and the Indians and the Jews is because of what happened back then.
Yeah.
I love how you're saying it, but I'm more interested now in how do you feel like you translate that with your daughter, right?
Yes, daughter.
Yeah. Bro, I think I must say like, when we were in that panel discussion and you were talking about your daughter and how you relate to her and how you view her, I was like, hey man, am I doing this thing correctly? I was like, yo, hey man, this guy is like, I think you were talking about how you were in the kitchen with your daughter. I'm trying to recall the story a bit. And you just talked about how responding to your daughter as a person, as a soul, as a conscious human, is so important. And that not just acknowledging them as a kid, but not acknowledging them as a human being that is having an experience. I mean, I don't want to butcher this, but how do you relate to your daughter knowing all that you know with the context of, you know, your own upbringing?
So, I mean, I was lucky to have a liberal father who had a very global outlook on life.
Sure.
And hence we were able to work together because there was a mutual respect from the first time that I walked in the door. And part of that mutual respect was also exercising discipline, right? So being able to know that between 8 and 5, his name is Brajon. After 5, ke papa, you know, and knowing that getting into that mind frame is a discipline and also allows us to interact and engage quite differently. You know, yes, we in the business have inculcated the spirit and the values of Africanism, but at the same time, you know, we almost explore what a liberal family would kind of have, you know, in terms of equal contribution to conversation and consultation and key decision making. That's how you build a business. He's the chairman of the company, but I run my own division and there's certain things that I want to do a certain way.
Must be so interesting.
And that's almost the learned experience of the fatherhood that I've been able to benefit from. And, you know, with Lesego, I guess she bears the dividends of that kind of relationship that I've had with my father.
Yeah.
And you so correctly put it, I see Lesego Kenya as an equal. And I had to learn through reading a book called Conscious Parenting, that, you know, our children are not these humans in a hierarchical point of view. If you are able to look at them as equals and you're able to harness their energy and how they exist in the universe in a different way, you actually can learn as much as they learn from you. Our relationship in terms of father and daughter is based on the fact that we've got different things to offer.
100%,
not because I've been alive for longer, therefore I've got a better say. And so the relationship that we now have is quite linear, but it also comes with that discipline that I spoke about. And obviously language is a challenge, like most things. But when you connect at a spiritual level, you start to connect with children in a very beautiful way. Certain things I'm learning from her is how to experience adventure, how to face fear, how to engage newness, the spirit of exploration. These are things that as adults get chipped away at us and they like, kind of get blunted over time.
Like even as you're saying it, I'm just like, you know, there's a childlikeness that as you grow up, you forget how to be a child.
Yeah.
That's what adulting does to all of us. And I think that especially I kind of like agree with you. I'm thinking about my own kids and what they've done for me, where it's like, sometimes you're like, yeah, they're like, let's camp outside. And I'm like, in this small little thing.
Yeah.
And you know, like when you start like, I'm, I don't know, for those that are listening, I'm like 1.9. Like, and I'm like, my kids are like, come inside and come camp with us in our little house. And I'm like, I could barely fit in there, but like just, you know, cocoon in there with these little kids. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of like miss being a kid because there's an innocence that you have or that you had. That you kind of like have to work really hard to, you know, sustain again when you're an adult. I'm learning from what you're saying a lot, because I think I've been reading a book called Loving Our Kids Intentionally, which has the same principle, right, of seeing your kid as an equal, not in those words per se, but what it says is that you must remember that you're not raising a boy. You're raising a man. If you're raising boys, you're raising a woman that's going to exist in society. So how you raise them up matters, right? Absolutely. How you engage with them, how you, you know, set up values around them matters. So I think, I'm learning. As you're talking as well. So I'm just taking it in as well. But I'm curious, bro. You know, as much as this black excellence thing is such an important thing, I wonder, right? Excellence is excellence. Black excellence it's the cherry on top that we have to apply in this whole narrative. How do you teach that to your kid?
Yeah. You know, because I'm the founder of Black Excellence, I get this question a lot.
Sure.
You know, why should excellence be qualified by blackness? Should it not be just a universal concept that, you know, doesn't change who achieves it? And I always say that for me, black is a context, right? If you do not know the life of a black person, you will not fully appreciate the successes that then come.
100%.
You know, you do not know when a person becomes a CEO of a JSE listed company, you do not know the hardships they had to go through and endure in order to get there. And so when you don't recognize that they are black, you take out the context of that journey. And I think those experiences are important for us. You need to know that as a kid, I used to walk to school 20 kilometers with no shoes. You need to know that I lived on one meal a day. You need to know that I lived with a single parent who was a mom, who was a domestic worker, whom I probably didn't see out of 2 hours in a day. This is the things that have shaped me. So when you call me tenacious, fearless, you know, all of these things, you must know where they come from.
Yes.
And that for me is why black excellence was important, because it's also unique. It's a unique experience. You cannot take our experience and put it in this kind of kaleidoscope, colorful thing.
Yeah.
That's not our reality. We've got a very specific reality based on a very specific systemic, approach to making sure that we do not succeed.
Yeah.
And therefore, when we do succeed, goodness me, you better know what we had to do to get there.
Bro.
And also, we celebrate our successes very differently.
Very differently.
And you need to know the other side of that, you know, so that people can also learn from the black experience. It can't be that we are always borrowing from the dominant logic and superior logic of others, you know, yet we as Africans have had excellence in us from the moment the sand drew on the walls and called them cave paintings. Mm. You know, from the moment the Egyptians started to create geometry and science, you know, all of these things have been taken away from us and presented as if they came from somewhere else in the world. So when we claim black excellence, we start to go back into history and start to make sure that people understand that this is not the first time we're doing this. Sure. It just so happens that every now and then it's the first black pilot, the first black astronaut, the first black this. But there's many first black stuff that people have not known about that we have done before what people are experiencing today that enables science, biology, art to be what it is today.
And for Lesego, how does, I mean, like, I can only imagine, like, you know, the conversations that happen between your wife and you in the house and your daughter picks up on all of these things. Has there been an instance where, you know, you've gone, you know, the passionate route and you're going in at this black excellence and she's caught on that?
Yeah. So in the context, there's two important things that are important for this part is, number one, we named her Kenya specifically because we wanted her to have a grounding in the continent. We wanted her to have a strong name, something that was not going to limit her ability to interact globally.
Sure.
The second thing is she's 4 years old. So whatever she picks up, have that in mind in terms of what would a four-year-old hear and listen to.
Yeah.
She's gone past the Peppa Pig phase now. She's now on the Ben and Holly vibe. So. Yeah.
I'm there with you, bro. My oldest is 5, so like we are on the same train, bro.
Yeah. So I mean, when we talk like adults.
Sure.
Because you can't, on the one side, say you want to interact with your child as an equal, but then talk to them like this all the time. We spoke to her like she's a human being who deserves respect, and as such her ability to engage and to speak is that much more heightened. You know, so she picks up on all the stuff we talk about. My wife is a strong pro-black, pro-Africa, pro-women activist. You know, I am the same. And so when we engage, that is what Lesego is hearing as part of her background noise. And we hope that subliminally she's almost taking these pearls, embedding them in her psyche and allowing them to shape her vocab of how she's going to now know the world as she goes out as Lesego Kenya, who is not limited by the boundaries of this country, the color of her skin, the gender that she is, and so on.
Yeah. Man. I'm learning a lot while you're talking. I'm just like, yo, bro, we need like a proper sit down with this thing. But you know what? I think as we go, you know, right now, you know, I remember when we launched this podcast probably almost 12 months ago. You know, it was on the back of, you know, 16 days of activism. And, you know, around this time, Unene was, you know, had passed on. And there was such a call on black men to like wake up. What the hell? We're back here. It hasn't gotten any better. And I wanna pick your brain, you know, as much as we're talking about black excellence and in the parenting spaces, like for you, you know, where's your mind at when you're processing all of this stuff?
Sure, that's such a big question. So I think the first thing I have had to acknowledge is the fact that I myself am a perpetrator of gender-based violence. I think that once I am able to internalize my contribution to the problem, then I can be a part of the solution. And you know, I think what has happened is gender-based violence has almost become like this huge umbrella term that defines beating up a woman or raping a woman or killing a woman. The subtleties of the spectrum on the other side of small things that we as men do has almost been overlooked. Yes. And that's why you've got lots of men who will sit and say, no, not me.
Yeah.
I'm not trash. All I've never done this.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. And then you just only have to sit with them and say, take me through your journey as a young male in high school. How did you treat girls?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get involved as a young man in varsity in doing this thing, hookah is way, as they used to say. Like, let's go just pick up the chicks.
Yeah.
And for no other reason but to have chicks around for your pleasure, right? Did you ever go to the shop and buy loads of alcohol so that chicks can get hammered, so that it improves your chances of coming right?
Yeah.
Right? Did you...
Common story, yeah.
You know, these are the common stories. What we talk about in the locker rooms, you know, how we treat our lady friends, you know, or through time as we grow up. There are so many examples and incidents of all of us as men being contributors to these subtle and even more heightened versions of gender-based violence.
And just on that subtle thing, I remember when I was talking to my wife about this, it's like, listen, if you are home and you're speaking respectfully to me, or you are changing your kids' nappies, or you are, you know, saying something to someone that is, you know, speaking disrespectfully to a woman, there's nothing special about that. You should be doing that. You are not a cream of the crop just because you are doing something decent.
Yes.
You know, and I think the thing that you're saying about the subtle things go off the radar is because they are now seen as a superman in the society if you are the guy that's saying I stand against gender-based violence. No,
that's not to be celebrated.
No, my friend, that's like, there's nothing special about that. And I think I commend you, because I know that you do a lot of things on the ground outside of just having the conversation about these things. So I think I value having you here. There's so much I would want to talk to you about. Hopefully I'll have you again on this thing. And as we wrap up this thing, I want to ask you one question.
Yeah.
Is there are fathers that are, you know, that are about to become fathers. I know you are 5'2" in terms of additions. And there are those that are dads already. And I want to ask you, what would you want to say to the black dad that is out there, upcoming or current?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's three things. The first is, I think, recognize that you are of value. I think we've gone through our own traumas as men, as black men particularly, and that the violence that we perpetrate is not coming from nowhere. And we need to heal. So there's a lot of work that we need to do in, first of all, understanding what happened to us. Where did the rails come off?
Sure.
And then start to invest time in doing the work of healing.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, my brother, my dear brother on the other side of this, find a way to understand your pain and start healing from it, because there's tremendous wisdom in pain. That's the first thing. The second thing is, connect with your level of humanity. We do not have to be special people. We just have to be human beings.
Yeah.
And that will improve the quality of relationships that you have with everybody, let alone with women.
Yeah.
If you just have the basic decency to have respect, integrity, you know, be trustworthy, be accountable, take responsibility for your actions, I think you can get, you know, a long way in terms of building the relationships and the quality of relationships. And the third thing is, I think, continue to aspire for greatness. I think the human spirit is geared towards wanting more and achieving more. And I always say, if you can wake up every day and put your head down at night and say, today I was a contribution, then I think you've done good for that day. Just live your life and try to be a contribution.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Bro, you touched on men healing. I feel slightly emotional at it because I'm also just in the middle of, therapy at the moment. And it's therapy that's dealing with a lot of stuff in my past. But I also realize this, you know, I always try to put myself in the shoes of the people that are on that are the perpetrators, that are the instigators of the pain. And you're like, how in the world do you think it's okay to martyr someone? At what point in your own humanity and sanity is that okay? You know, at what point is it okay for you to speak in any derogatory way to someone and think that that is okay? There's a reason for that, right? There's somewhere, it comes from somewhere. It comes from you in your own upbringing. It comes from something that you learned from someone else that you thought was okay. But it also comes from some scars, right? So I'm like, you know, when you said healing, I'm like, bro, you just opened up a big can, because I think, you know, right now I just saw someone in someone's Instagram story saying, like, you know, men that are going to see therapists, I'm here to see that. You know, like, I think a lot about people are tormented in their thoughts, you know, subconsciously, consciously, like the psychology of the black men right now is full of so much crap, bro, that you don't know where to go to. And in most cases, you're like the guy in the village that is raping a 80-year-old woman. He needs to deal with that stuff. In as much as we will write him off and he's going to go to jail or whatever that's going to happen to him, he still needs to deal with that. How does he do that? You know, so yeah. So I'm like, yeah, I'm touched at that thought, but I also want to know what your thinking is about that.
I think violated people perpetrate violence.
Hundreds.
I don't think that any child is born with an inch of violence in them. We are born happy. We are born excited. We are born aspiring. And over time, humanity does things to us that chips away at that purity.
Yeah.
And that is not just, you know, from the girl child. It's the boy child as well. And there's certain things that have been normalized in the boy experience whilst they grow up that we didn't realize that it's actually violating them, you know. And I go back to this and I say, you know, there's so much in just being able to be raised in a home where your father is present that changes your trajectory and your behavioral patterns of the future. You know, the fact that for generations and generations, young black men have not had their fathers, the opportunity for their fathers to be around, for them to find comfort, safety, a feeling of security, support, you know, identity, means that they are walking around the world not having a sense of identity. Now, I don't know if there's any greater violation to a human than ridding them of their identity. So you've got black men walking around here who proclaim to be something, but they don't understand what that is. And the work starts with being able to connect with that sense of identity. Now, how do you do that when the person you want to call dad or your father is no longer around? Whether they be passed on or geographically, or you just can't connect with them. That level of violation for me is part of the beginning of the problem. You know, then, you know, through time, there's so many others that present themselves. And as men, we are told, "Qina ndoda, you're going to be okay." You know, just put a strong face, you know, put cement, swallow a teaspoon of cement and go ahead with this thing, you know. And then at some point, this guy breaks and he explodes and he does, you know, an act of violence. That's why I started by saying the violated perpetrate violence, because we are not born hating. We're not born violent. What happens to the black boy child that by the age of 16, he can go hijack and kill people? Something must have broken. And it's society in its entirety that has contributed to that brokenness. So we must collectively then, number one, take responsibility. And then number two, assist in the journey of healing without judging. You know, I think that men are running into caves because they don't find the safe space to have courageous conversations. You know, we don't have the tools to talk about gender-based violence and feminism. The moment we open our mouths, you're judging yourself and you're going to be judged. You know, you're going to use the wrong word or terminology and someone is going to say, "Oh yeah, that makes you a this." And you're like, "Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then I might as well not be here." You know, so part of allowing us to heal has to do with creating an environment that allows us to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
There's so much power and vulnerability.
Yes.
But the Black African man has not been given the space to be vulnerable.
I've been reading this book called The Madness of Crowds, and it talks about the contribution of society towards all the illnesses that we have in our society.
Mm.
And how I think when we see a man or a woman doing something that is just wayward, we look at them just as the individual and we isolate ourselves as the society, and we don't see any fault in what we've done and what we've enabled in that person. And I think, you know, what it just opened my eyes to is that, you know, we have this, sometimes I feel like, you know, this ethos that we have as Black people, it's like sometimes it feels like we're slowly moving away from that being a way of life. Men, as you said it, don't have these platforms to process, right? Like, you know, the other day, sometimes, like, you know, in my circles, I have like really, really, really passionate women that are like, yo, dog, if I smell any hint of patriarchy in what you're doing, I'm like going to call it out and everything.
Mm.
I appreciate that for what it is, but sometimes it's like, do you have a safe space as a man to process all the things that are actually broken in you, right? The answer to that question, right, dictates if whether or not we're going to progress in dealing with this thing. If I don't have a safe space, right, to sit with everything that is right and wrong in my thinking, there's a problem. There's a problem.
Yeah. And part of doing the work then is also helping each other to build the platforms. And I think this is what this podcast is about, right?
Yeah.
It's taking responsibility for the journey of manhood as men.
Yeah.
Because I think women are also saying, guys, we have our own problems. Like,
yes.
We've been carrying men on our shoulders for the last hundreds of centuries. And we now want to be able to breathe, like put your knee off my neck type stuff. Go do your healing. Go do the work. Create those platforms. Do the hard work.
Yeah.
And once we can see that you're doing the work, it might be easier for us to then make ourselves available to have these conversations.
Mm.
And I think there's validity in that.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost the same as racism. Whenever I feel like I'm being hard done by in a conversation around feminism and patriarchy, I always plug myself in a racism how would I respond to a white person who I'm saying now or is asking me to create the platforms for them to go and learn why is it bad to be a racist?
Yeah.
No, dude, you go do some reading. Go understand what are the laws that made the world the way that it is for me to be reacting in this way. Once you've demonstrated to me that you've got a bit of a background of why George Floyd was a terrible thing to happen, then we can start having the conversation. Meet me somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Bro, and I can only... Our kids would probably... I can only imagine what they're going to inherit from these kind of conversations happening now. They would probably be at a much better standing than what we were at our age at this time. But yeah. Bro, I have so much more questions and so much more to say, but you know what? That's probably for another day, and I'm probably going to have you here again. Thank you so much for your time, bro. And guys, that's it, folks.
Thank you, everyone. Take care. Be strong.
I am Khawul Ghora, and thank you for listening to Son of a Son.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.